You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Claire Balderson with NewsHour. Unrest in Tunisia is escalating. There have been more protests in the capital, Tunis, in industrial cities and in tourist towns across the country. Much of the news about the demonstrations is spreading through social networking and other internet sites. A video uploaded on YouTube shows a street protest said to have taken place today in the city of Mahdia. Dozens of young men are seen holding national flags and chanting, "Freedom, freedom. Freedom, no presidency for life." In Tunis, the capital, meanwhile, the security forces opened fire on demonstrators. There are reports of more deaths and injuries. The Tunisian government says the violence is provoked by a small number of extremists. But that's denied by those taking part, who include university professors and business people. The protests, initially against unemployment and the rising cost of living, have been getting worse and they've been spreading. These were some of the young men who were out on the streets in Tunis.
The people only wanted to express their opinion in a peaceful way, in a friendly way. It is the ruler who provoked the Tunisian youth. It's he who provoked the Tunisian people to the point where we are now.
They humiliated all of us. It's the ruler of our country who humiliated us.
Well, in the past couple of hours, President Zine Al Abidine Ben Ali has addressed the nation on television. He made several promises, including slashing food prices, stopping the security forces using live firearms, and he said he wouldn't stand again when his term expires in 3 years' time.
I will work on safeguarding and respecting the constitution, the country's constitution. And here, contrary to what some alleged, I would like to reiterate what I pledged on November the 7th, that there was no presidency for life. No presidency for life. Therefore, I reiterate my thanks for all those who had urged me to submit my candidacy for 2014.
Well, the BBC's Adam Minot is in Tunis, and I put it to him that the president does seem to have made quite a lot of concessions in his speech.
Yes, I mean, it certainly was a speech by a man who appeared to want to address some of the concerns that are felt by the people. I mean, I have to say, I think some of his words will be met with a deal of scepticism. And he addressed the people a few days ago and described those responsible for the protests as terrorists. So this has been quite a change in tone. And whether what he says will actually go some way towards persuading people not to take to the streets, I guess we're only going to find out over the course of the next few days.
Tell us a bit about the atmosphere today when you were out and about on the streets of Tunis.
Well, this morning I went right into the centre of the city, and already there was a very strange atmosphere there. And first of all, there was an unprecedented sight, seeing soldiers standing outside the main bank, the National Bank in the centre of the city. There were armed police outside many of the embassies and diplomatic missions. And at every street corner. Later in the day, protesters started to voice their anger in exactly that region, right in the centre. Stones were thrown, police responded with tear gas and live firing, and there are reports that possibly as many as 4 people may have been killed. It's been impossible to verify that. So the situation turned very nasty. I was on the outside, sort of beyond what became a cordon set up by police, and there was, again, a very febrile atmosphere. Tonight, a second night of curfew. Looking out from my hotel window, it all looks fairly quiet. But last night there was a curfew, and in the southern suburbs, people were on the streets again confronting the police. So it's dangerous, and it'll be interesting to see whether what the president has said has calmed the mood at all.
Will there be any comment, you think, from opposition politicians, or are they keeping out of it?
Well, their voice does seem to have been largely superfluous, I think might be a good way of describing it. They're not part of the political debate. At the moment, the debate is between a government which many people feel is deeply corrupt and has presided over a decaying economy, and the people on the streets. They're the people who are speaking loudest. I don't think it's a coordinated movement. I don't think there's a leadership behind the protesters. But the very fact that in towns and cities every day, dozens of towns and cities, there are protests of one sort or another, shows that this is a very deep-seated and very fundamental view held by many, many people.
That's the BBC's Adam Minot in Tunis. And just before we came on air, I spoke to a young Tunisian, Amel Galoul, who lives in a suburb of Tunis. And she told me about the rioting that she'd witnessed today.
It's been the craziest day as far as I'm concerned. I drove back from work around 4 o'clock and parked the car inside and just locked myself in, waiting for a friend. And she phoned me saying she couldn't drive through my street because it was blocked by police already. So she had to go somewhere else in the end. So I've been staying here alone. And when I briefly looked through the window before, around 4:30, and there were people running down the street, and I could see gas all over the place and black smoke, and I could hear a lot of noise. It was terrible.
Was it worse today than it has been in previous days?
I don't know, because apparently there's been just as much uproar last night in this area, but I wasn't staying here. I was staying over with a friend. I mean, what's changed today is that it's really generalised. Because a lot of people have been witnessing things all over Tunisia. It's not only in Tunis, so it's getting really out of hand now.
How are people hearing about the riots and the demonstrations and sort of knowing to go and join them?
I think it's via the internet and a lot of word of mouth. I mean, I've been connected ever since the events have started, and I've never used the internet as much as these past few days, through Twitter and Facebook mainly. People get the information and SMS, phone, and people are constantly talking and exchanging information, whether on the bus or on the phone at work. I mean, everyone is obsessed with what's going on.
What kind of things are they saying?
They're just exchanging information, like such and such was shot in the head and such has been hidden by the police. There's a riot going on in such a place. They've just burned down the supermarket and that kind of stuff. Also, there's been rumours about the president's family-in-law leaving the country and that kind of stuff.
The president has now spoken. He's given a national address. He's said that food prices should be cut. He said that he won't run for re-election and he doesn't want the armed forces to use live bullets anymore. What do you make of all of this?
I think everyone would agree to say that it's just a big joke. I mean, I'm just exchanging messages with my friends right now online on Facebook, and everyone just feels like crying. Everyone's really disappointed. You feel like saying to him, who the hell do you think we are? I mean, do you really think we're going to, you know, leave you alone and carry on, you know, whatever you've been doing for the last 23 years? So it's just a big joke, really.
But if he says he's going to step down, what more is it that people want?
They want him to leave literally right now. They want him to go in a jet and just leave. They just want a new government from head to toe.
So this is as much about the government, the way it runs the country, as it is about unemployment and...
Oh, yeah, it's more about corruption and lack of freedom of speech than it is about unemployment.
Do you think people will go on protesting like this?
I'm afraid so, yeah.
You're afraid so? It's depressing.
Yeah.
Are you scared?
Oh, very. I was terrified this afternoon. Absolutely. I mean, because when you hear the riot, I mean, it was on my street. It wasn't like around the corner. It was literally on my street. I could see people running down my street in front of my house, and I could see smoke everywhere. And I actually could smell it. My eyes started burning and my nose started burning. It was horrible.
Was there gunfire?
I don't know if it was like proper bullets or if it was just gas. I don't really know, but there were a lot. And there's been ambulances as well in the area, like, just about an hour ago. Really, really scary.
Does that mean you can't go out at all? You're really stuck in your house.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, there's no way I can go out. No way.
That's young Tunisian Amel Galoul in a suburb of Tunis. And we'll have more from Tunisia later in the programme when we'll hear from the British ambassador there. More from Tunisia now, after another day of riots and demonstrations throughout the country. The president has been on national TV to announce a number of concessions, including that he won't stand for election again. He also said firing at civilians was unacceptable.
أسف كبير, أسف كبير وكبير جدا وعميق جدا عميق جدا.
I feel deep regret, very, very deep and massive regret, President Zine al-Abidine Ben Ali said. Enough violence, enough violence. I've also given instructions to the Interior Minister. I reiterated these instructions. I stressed them today. Enough resorting to live ammunition. Live ammunition is unacceptable. Well, shortly before that speech, I spoke to the British ambassador to Tunis, Chris O'Connor, and he described what he had seen and heard today.
Right now, there are violent demonstrations in the suburbs of Tunis. In fact, I can hear some gunfire from where I am at the moment, but also elsewhere, right across the country, in the industrial heartland, and yesterday and today, in the major tourist destinations, including Hammamet.
How bad were those demonstrations?
Well, yesterday, from eyewitnesses that we were talking to, there were certainly a number of people killed and many more injured. And from the reports that I've got so far today, that has continued. There are buildings that have been burned down, and there's certainly again casualties amongst the protesters.
And you say there's been trouble in the suburbs of Tunis, also in the centre?
There was, to some degree, today. As far as I know at the moment, it's primarily around the suburbs. There's the western popular suburb of Tadaman, where there were very substantial clashes last night, and they've resumed now, but also in many of the other suburbs, including the north tonight.
And when you say clashes, who's actually involved in this?
It's hard to say, but what it appears to be is a very wide range of people from all across society, certainly dominated by young people, but it's very large numbers of people of all kinds as far as we can see.
And on the other side, police or army?
It's police. There have been some reports that in some parts of the country the army has been deployed, but certainly in most circumstances it's the police who are confronting the protesters.
Are you surprised that they are using live ammunition to do this?
Well, yes, and the Foreign Secretary on Tuesday was clear in a statement that he made condemning the violence and death of the protesters and calling on the Tunisian government to resolve the underlying issues peacefully. Certainly, it doesn't seem at the moment that that is happening, and the continuing use of firearms against the protesters is something that is of continuing grave concern to us.
Well, what are the underlying issues, do you think?
Well, the protests began as protests relating to economic hardships, primarily unemployment and primarily in the poorer regions of Tunisia. But they've developed now into a wider social and political protest around the right to assemble and demonstrate and around media freedoms.
But this is spontaneous. There's no group organising it. It's not an opposition movement.
It is very largely spontaneous. There are a number of groups that are associating themselves with this and organising elements of it. But primarily, this does appear to be a very widely based popular protest.
Do you think the Tunisian government's been taken a little bit by surprise by this?
I'm sure they have. These events are absolutely unprecedented in Tunisia. The Tunisian government has prided themselves for many years on delivering stability and security. And they will, I'm sure, be deeply shocked. To be honest, I think a lot of us have been taken by surprise.
There were reports earlier today that the foreign minister had resigned, and there was a statement on his website that certainly suggested that, and then that was later denied by the foreign ministry and by other officials. Can you help us at all with that, whether that was true at any point, someone put out a hoax or what?
I met him this morning, and he was certainly in office and representing the government. I, though, have seen the reports this afternoon that he resigned and the retractions. I'm afraid, for the moment, those are unconfirmed reports, and I don't have any insight.
As the British ambassador in Tunis, Chris O'Connor.
Thousands of people have been on the streets of the Tunisian capital, Tunis, today, demanding the resignation of the country's president, Zine Al Abidine Ben Ali. In the last few minutes, there have been reports of tear gas being fired at protesters outside the Interior Ministry. This despite the president's appearance on television last night, in which he attempted to address the concerns of those people who have been taking part in a month of increasingly violent anti-government protests. The man who first came to power in a bloodless coup 23 years ago said that he wouldn't be standing for re-election in 2014.
I will work on safeguarding and respecting the constitution, the country's constitution. And here, contrary to what some alleged, I would like to reiterate what I pledged on November the 7th, that there was no presidency for life. Therefore, I repeat my thanks for all those who had urged me to submit my candidacy for 2014.
Well, he promised a free media and an end to internet censorship. And he criticised the soldiers who had been opening fire on civilians.
I feel deep regret, very, very deep and massive regret. Enough violence, enough violence. I have also given instructions to the Interior Minister. I reiterated the instructions and I stress them today. Enough resorting to live ammunition. Live ammunition is unacceptable.
Well, there remains plenty of dispute about the number of people who have died in the protests. The opposition suggests it could be around 70. But there's no doubt that the police have been using live rounds against protesters. Well, that was the sound of gunfire on the streets of Tunis over the past few days. And in the last few minutes, Reuters news agency is reporting that there has been the sound of gunshots in the centre of the city again. Well, we can get the latest from the Tunisian capital from our correspondent Adam Minot. Adam, what's the scene like?
Well, I'm not right down outside the Interior Ministry, but I too have heard reports that there has been some sort of activity down there. And I heard that it was in fact tear gas canisters that had been fired. Often in these situations, it's hard to get a clear picture, but certainly earlier on, and this demonstration now outside the Interior Ministry has been going on for some hours. It's getting on for 5 hours or so that people have been gathered there in huge numbers. There were thousands there when I was there. They were surrounded by police, but initially, certainly the police were simply standing and watching. So having not witnessed what's happened in the last hour or so, I'm unable to really work out, you know, what it is that's changed the atmosphere there.
No, that's right. And so initially, at least, it did seem that the security forces had been heeding the president's call for calm, really.
Yes, I mean, he did say that he had instructed the police and the army not to fire live ammunition. Now, I don't think tear gas was not included in that. I mean, that remains an option, I guess, when protests in the view of the security forces get out of hand, and obviously tear gas is used in many parts of the world in crowd control. But I think, you know, there's enormous pressure now on the administration and on the security forces here, because I think people have basically treated the decision by President Ben Ali to open up the democratic process as an opportunity to take their protests onto the street, maybe in a more vocal way. I mean, certainly if the numbers are anything to go by, there were thousands who were out this morning, not just youth, there were older people. I spoke to lawyers, teachers, there were women there, even some children had been brought along. So, you know, this is a fast-evolving situation and clearly a fairly fragile one.
And the impression at the moment, as you say, it's hard to tell because it is moving, but the impression is that the president has taken a bit of quite a big gamble, and there are no signs yet that it's paid off.
I mean, it certainly looked like a gamble. I mean, another argument says, well, he had no option because his options had narrowed so much, and attempts to try to appease the protest in the country by, for example, sacking the Interior Minister 2 or 3 days ago had not worked. So he was really, some say, forced into making these concessions last night. And I guess the people think, well, if he's prepared to make those concessions, then we can carry on with our protests, and who knows, he may make more. They want, and the message was very, very clear with the half a dozen people I spoke to this morning at the protest, people of all sorts, young, old, they said that they saw the future of Tunisia as a more democratic one. And in order for that to happen, it had to be one without President Ben Ali in charge.
Adam Minot live in Tunis there. Well, let's get a sense of what those Tunisians are thinking. I've been speaking to two of them. Kemal, a 45-year-old father of two who lives in the suburbs of Tunis. First, so Gayath, he's a 23-year-old student who lives in Nabl. That's on the coast just east of the capital. What did he make of the president's speech?
I think that nobody believes on him anymore. They were just a puppet. They just want to show them, to influence the public opinion.
So you think he was just saying what the public wanted to hear? You don't believe he will actually do what he is promising to do?
Yes, yes. Actually, last night, 6 people died just after the speech. People are still protesting today.
Kamal, people are still protesting, aren't there? There's a big crowd outside the Interior Ministry. It doesn't sound as though the president has convinced a certain section of your society, Kamal.
A couple of things. First of all, I believe he means what he says.
Why? What makes you believe?
I think he's a sincere guy. I'm not sure that in the last, in the last few years, I think he's been a little bit, ill, and therefore probably getting some unfortunate advice from people who do have different agendas.
Does that not make you question whether or not he can follow through on his promises?
I don't know what the alternative is. I think we need to be very careful of what we ask for when we ask for change. Mr. Reith here asks for a change. Fine, that's fine. Who do you propose to change with?
First of all, the president was promising us for 23 years, and this is really a very long period. He did nothing at all. We can make a democratic election, and someone will come out. There is always someone.
Are there particular people out there that you would like to see in power?
For now, there is no specific one, but surely we can find someone. Ben Ali, he is not the only man in Tunisia.
Kamal, there's a lot of people are saying that. They are saying he has been in power a long time. There have been a lot of promises, and people have been disappointed.
I did not say that he was the only one. I do say, though, if he does not stand for election and his mandate ends in 3 years, that will give us time to put in place somebody that the vast majority of us can agree on. However, the violence of breaking things, of destroying property, this is our property that's being destroyed. That's not going to help.
Gayath, the manner in which this is happening, the manner of these protests is not helping.
Yes, I know. It is very sad. I am against any kind of violence.
Now, nobody said that the situation has been handled perfectly. In fact, it's been far from perfect. And I, for one, at the beginning of the week, was starting to wonder whether or not, he really shouldn't go because they were handling it terribly. Now, insofar as last night's speech is concerned, in my opinion, I think any port in a storm, as I said, we cannot go on with this violence. It is going to get us nowhere. You don't want to end up like, Algeria 16 years ago. You know, I think the unemployment is a disgrace. I think there's a lot of corruption in and around the president. But again, I don't want to see our country, which has been at peace for 54 years, come apart. Let's give the guy a chance.
Yeah, okay. Then why don't you talk about the plane that he bought by our own money? He has a Boeing, he has an Airbus, billions of dollars from our own money.
I don't know that that's true, and I don't know that that's false, but unless you've taken a ride...
No. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
As I said, you may know, and everybody may know, but I haven't been aware of it, and I certainly haven't taken a ride on it. Maybe you'll invite me.
There is no trust anymore on him. That's why people are protesting right this moment, in Tunis, everywhere.
And I was speaking to Gayath and to Kamal there in Tunisia. Well, Claire Spencer is head of the Middle East and North Africa programme at the British think tank Chatham House. Does she think this is a significant moment in Tunisian politics?
Well, it's possible. I'm struck by the reflections of the last two Tunisians, that they're actually talking in terms of one single man, the president, whereas in fact what's needed in places like Tunisia is less emphasis on single individuals or very small clans of elites, but more participation. So it's really the broadening out of a democratic system.
Well, one interesting thing, one of the speakers, when I asked him there, who else is there, he couldn't actually think of anyone.
Well, I think what's interesting is we've seen the Union of Tunisian Workers, the General Union of Tunisian Workers, have been supporting the protests and are prepared, I think, to be a very strong negotiating partner, since initially this was about unemployment and economic prospects. And I think from there, Tunisia has a long history of being a very peaceable nation. They're not like Algeria next door, as the analogy was said. They don't take to the streets easily. And yes, there is distress over property destroyed and the speed with which this has happened. But as the young man said, it's 23 3 years since Ben Ali has run the place. It's been a very personalised rule. It is extended, and this is part of the problem, to his immediate family, who've bought villas and have been certainly more ostentatious in displays of wealth. This also angers people. What it needs is a system to go back to what Tunisia was once, a very constitutional state. Their nationalist party at the time the French were running the protectorate was actually called the Destour, and then the Neo-Destour, which means constitution in Arabic. Therefore, they have every possibility, it seems to me, to change things into positive directions.
You mentioned the French there. Will much depend on them and how they see this in terms of whether or not the president follows through with his promises?
Yes, I think the French are critical here, and it's interesting that French statements have been cautious so far, saying, yes, we encourage openness and more openness. They're not dictating the terms of what should happen, but I think, and I hope behind the scenes, they will be saying to Ben Ali, look, this is the end of the road. We can help you engineer a dignified exit, but that exit may indeed be sooner rather than later.
And how will that be seen in the rest of the region?
I think everyone is taking note. Already people on websites, etc., have been talking about a Tunisian scenario. I think if this can have a happy ending and it doesn't spin out of control any more than it has already, and here the responses of the security forces, as Adam has quite rightly pointed out, is critical. Can the whole system, which has been based on repressive policing, actually change overnight to something more gentle and light-footed, is still an open question.
And I suppose one might ask whether other countries might see what's happening and wonder whether they should become more repressive.
Well, that's certainly not the lesson I think they should be taking from this. As we've seen, there have been protests in Algeria. Everyone is very concerned about the succession issue, the presidential elections later on in Egypt this year. These share the same characteristics of large, youthful, unemployed populations who are no longer able to be controlled in the old ways that they were.
And that was Claire Spencer, head of the Middle East and North Africa programme at the British think tank Chatham House.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Claire Balderson with NewsHour. A momentous day for Tunisia, with implications not just for the 10 million people who live there, but for millions more across North Africa and the Arab world. After 23 years in office, President Zine El Abidine Ben Ali has been forced out by days of increasingly angry popular protest. He's reported to have left the country. A short time ago, the Prime Minister, Mohamed Ghannouchi, went on state television to say he was taking over.
طبقا لأحكام الفصل 56 من الدستور الذي ينص
In accordance with Article 56 of the Constitution, which states that if the President is temporarily unable to exercise his duties, these duties devolve temporarily upon the Prime Minister, and given that the President is temporarily unable to carry out his duties, from this moment I am assuming the responsibilities of the President.
It was the culmination of events that had moved fast throughout the day. Once again, demonstrators were on the streets calling for the president to go. He'd been on television late yesterday, promising he wouldn't stand for re-election. But it wasn't enough for the crowds who've been protesting against high unemployment, the rising cost of living, and government corruption. We'll sit here until the regime comes down, they chanted in the centre of the capital, Tunis. But once again, the protests led to confrontation. The police, who'd been told by the president not to use live ammunition, fired tear gas at the protesters as they tried to force their way into the Interior Ministry. But the demonstrators wouldn't give up, and there were reports of similar protests in other major cities. Frightened tourists talked of rioters out on the streets of the beach resorts. And there was just one focus of their anger, just one reason they were out there, summed up by Radia Nasrai, a human rights lawyer whose husband, a prominent opposition spokesman, has been missing since earlier in the week.
I think Ben Ali must resign now, just now. He cannot be the president when all the Tunisian people, woman and man, young and not young, are asking him to leave. He must go away.
But still, President Ben Ali tried to cling on to power, declaring a state of emergency, dissolving the government and promising new legislative elections within 6 months. Again, state television conveyed the message to the public.
We
bring you urgent news. In order to protect persons and property from rioting, it's been decided to declare a state of emergency in all parts of the Republic. This means, first, all gatherings of more than three people are strictly forbidden in any place. Second, a curfew preventing any movements by people or vehicles will be imposed from 5 in the evening until 7 in the morning. Third, the security forces and the National Army are able to use weapons against any suspect person who ignores an order to stop, or tries to flee, or does not allow an opportunity to force him to stop. These measures are effective from this moment until further notice.
Well, in this programme, we'll cover the day's events. We'll look at their impact on the future of Tunisia and, of course, on the wider Arab region. Dramatic, momentous, those are the words I've been using. Are they exaggerations? The BBC's Arab Affairs analyst, Magdi Abdelhadi, has been watching it all in Tunisia unfold.
It's an historic day. It's unprecedented. It's never happened before in North Africa or the wider Arab world. There have been bread riots. They will last for 1 or 2 days. But nothing like this that started a small spark that built up quickly into a nationwide movement to protest, moving on from the purely economic to the political and ultimately ending up with bringing down the head of the regime. I think it's quite important to emphasize we haven't seen a storming of the Bastille or the taking over the parliament. The political class are still intact. And this is Act 1, and we still don't know what Act 2 and Act 3 will bring.
Indeed, and we will be talking a lot more about that. But tell us about the president, the man who has now reportedly left the country. We don't know where he's gone. Why was so much anger directed against him? It was all about him.
It's so difficult to imagine someone ruling for so long and continue to be popular, especially when you have widespread poverty and political repression. Although Tunisia has always had a lot in common in terms of the authoritarian or despotic, whichever adjective you like to choose to describe the nature of the regime, the Tunisian one was particularly repressive. I mean, control of the internet, of some Arab countries have allowed some free media, not in Tunisia, and also the serious allegations of corruption close to the president's family himself. There have been calls for to put his wife and the family, the extended family of his wife, Leila Trabulsi, on trial precisely because people accuse them of having plundered the country. So the anger and the hatred was really directed at the Ben Ali family and his wife, and that is, it is understandable.
Yeah, and we are now getting reports, as I say, unconfirmed at this stage. Things are very fluid in Tunisia at the moment. We are getting reports that some of his relatives have been arrested. Until now, though, Magdi, this has been a place, well, it's a place where lots of people go on holiday because it's politically stable, economically doing quite well.
Well, I mean, this is the touristic perception of many other poor countries where there is repressive political regimes. People start to take notice only when things go wrong. And I think people started to take notice recently of Tunisia following the very damaging WikiLeaks detailing in American cables what kind of political system that was, pointing the fingers at corruption very close to former president, shall we say, Ben Ali and his family.
That's the BBC's Magdi Abdelhadi, and we're joined now from Tunis by our correspondent Wira Davis. Wira, what is the situation now? Night has fallen. Are the streets quiet?
Yes, which is interesting because, you know, the protesters, you could have got what they wanted. The man they wanted to step down after weeks of protest has gone. But like Magdi said, this is just Act 1. They want to see, of course, widespread political reform. They want to see jobs and the political openings for everybody, the well-educated people of Tunisia. And I think that's why there aren't hundreds of people on the streets here tonight. There's no fireworks, there's no mass celebration, because there's still a long way to go. Of course, the army will have a big say in this. But the last thing I saw before I came on the phone to you was a tank rolling up the street outside the foreign ministry, which is a reminder, you know, that the military in many of these North African regimes will have had a big hand both in the president's departure and what is to come next. Many people are hoping or expecting perhaps some sort of liberal awakening where there's quite an open, free and fair elections. Yet we might not see that. There may be still some people here determined to try and cling on to power. So this has some way to play out yet, although It's been a tremendous, you know, it's been an amazing 12 hours because first thing this morning, the president was there clinging on to power. There were police and military on the streets shooting at protesters. And then suddenly 12 hours later, the whole thing has changed.
And how bad was the violence today? Did it escalate? I mean, is that why he left so suddenly?
It was. I mean, it was as bad today. Many people say it's bad. It's certainly here in the capital, Tunis, you had thousands of people descending on the Minister of Interior, which has become a symbol, if you like, for many people, for the corruption and the inadequacies of this regime. And the centre of town this afternoon was a very scary place. There were a lot of army on the streets, still clearly defending those government institutions against the people. Now, at some point this afternoon, senior military figures and senior political figures saw the writing on the wall. They realised that the people were no longer with the president, and therefore they were no longer with the president. And that was an amazing few hours when, on one hand, you had a state of emergency being declared, and barely 2 hours later, the president himself was forced to resign.
OK, Wera Davis in Tunis. Thank you very much indeed. Well, Youssef is a resident of Tunis. He was at the demonstrations in the centre of the city today, calling for Mr. Ben Ali to stand down. And so he told me how he felt about today's events.
Extremely happy. We are very happy. And now we're just, you know, after a long, long day, I'm here with friends, all young people, and we are very excited about this big change in Tunisia.
But what is the change? The change is the president's gone, but then what?
Well, I understand, like, politically and economically, we are in a very fragile moment. But let's put it clearly, you know, even though our president had all international support from every single foreign government, it was a quasi-mafia here. And you were talking about the WikiLeaks report, and you have an idea, but here the extent is much, much deeper. And it got to a level that we couldn't stand it anymore.
What was the atmosphere like then when you were out on the streets today? Did you think this is what was going to happen?
Well, to tell you the truth, yesterday I tweeted and I said, you know, today I will be free. I didn't really know if I would be free or not, but I knew that we scared them a lot. We knew that we were getting very close to our goals, and we were determined. We felt that today we could mobilize a lot of people, and that's what actually happened. We had thousands of people join us. It was a Woodstock type, you know, of gathering. It was practically a festival. You could see people from all social classes in Tunisia together having fun, you know, enjoying, distributing water, even though it wasn't structured and it wasn't organized. And we were united behind, you know, our demand.
That was Youssef in Tunis. And from there, we go to Sabri, who lives in Sousse, which is south of Tunis. And he told me what the situation had been like there.
There were a few demonstrations this afternoon, nothing very important in the city centre. Things calmed down at around 5 p.m.
Do you feel this was an uprising of your whole nation, that you were all taking part, or was it focused very much on Tunis?
Well, it wouldn't compare to Tunis in terms of people. There was a lot of questions today in Sousse. People didn't really know how things would continue, would keep on going. And well, people are very relieved this evening.
They're relieved, why? Because they wanted the president to go?
Well, I think demonstrations the last day showed that. Yeah, and because since the announcement yesterday and the third speech, people didn't really know what it was about and if the promises would be kept. And so people wanted the president out.
That was Sabri in Sousse in Tunisia. We got lots more on this story coming up in the programme, including some of your comments on Facebook. Igoni says, it's always better to stand up for your rights rather than laying complaints. My Tunisian brothers, you people have just marked your names in the annals of history. Maynard on Facebook says, when I first heard of the protest, I dismissed it as something that would fizzle out or just be violently crushed by the state. I thought they were asking too much from an African government complaining of lack of jobs, but voila, it's a new dawn for Africa, she says. But a little bit of a word of caution from Triton on the World Have Your Say blog. This is, history's proven time and time again that when an African dictator flees a country, that country will soon slip from hysteric happiness to despair, to civil war, to complete bloodletting. This country will end up as another failed African state, leaning toward radical Islamic beliefs. My spirit hopes for happiness, hope, faith and wisdom to lead the people, but my common sense tells tells me otherwise. We'll be talking a bit more about some of those sentiments later on in the programme. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. And coming up later in the programme, we'll get reaction to the momentous events in Tunisia. We'll hear from France, from other North African countries closely watching events. And we'll hear the views of Tunisian opposition politician Ahmed Bouazi.
We have to pay attention to the demands of all these people who went on the street during 4 weeks. And we think that to maintain the institutions, the republican institutions, this is a sort of layout that was organized, not to permit to a military coup.
And that is our main story today. The president of Tunisia has been replaced after weeks of unrest. The prime minister has assumed power. Earlier, the former president had declared a state of emergency and sacked the government. Troops have surrounded the main airport and an overnight curfew is in place. You're listening to NewsHour with Claire Balderson, and we'll stay with events in Tunisia, where the president is reported to have left the country after days of escalating street protests. In the past couple of hours, here on the BBC World Service, World Have Your Say has been hearing from Tunisians and people living in neighbouring countries. Here's some of what they've been saying.
I'm free Tunisian citizen. Today is the first day I can say that probably in my entire life. We never had this chance, I mean, to really prove to the world that Tunisia, an Arabic country, we are an example now in the entire Arabic world. But now we have to be the example for them. We have a big, big, big amount of work to do, but it's not something that scares me. I mean, I'm pretty sure everything is going to be fine for Tunisia. A lot of investors are investing in Tunisia. They used to invest before, and I'm pretty sure they're going to invest even more now because we have really a freedom. Hopefully we're going to have a new government that's going to be able to give to the people what they really wanted for the past years. I personally don't think that any government that's going to come now in Tunisia will be able to do what they've done before to our country, because today is the first day Tunisians, all of them, all over the world, they said no, enough with the dictatorship.
I think the people in Tunisia are happy now because they're not going to be fooled around another time by any kind of dictatorship or anything like that. The situation now, it's really fragile for the next years to come, I guess. But I have confidence in my people and on my country.
I think that this is a big opportunity for us to create our future full of hope.
I think that the Tunisian people opened the door for us and made us re-believe again in our ability to defend our homelands and to move forward for democracy and liberty. I think all Arab people live under the same circumstances, under the same oppressive regimes, under the same dictators. So what the Tunisian people did, we will do in Egypt, in Syria, and all over the Arabic world.
I mean, we proved within 1 week only that an Arab country could democratically win this fight without the help of anyone and, you know, without any religious or Islamist revendication whatsoever. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. And I hope that will be a message for other countries that might have been in the same situation as us. Civil war commence. That's obviously a worry for all of us because, obviously, you know, when a dictator goes away, God knows what's going to happen later. But I think that, you know, this whole thing has not been just there for out of nothing. It started off because of the unemployment, but I think it's much deeper than that. Tunisian people are very educated, and I think that, you know, they would try to make the right choices without turning into a civil war. I don't think that's really the problem here. Obviously, it's going to be very hard economically, but if the message of Mohamed Bouazizi of work, liberty and dignity is going to be followed by people, then it should be fine. We will all build a new Tunisia together, I think.
Those were some of the callers to World Have Your Say a little earlier today. Well, joining us now is Dr. Hakim Darboush, a North Africa expert at Oxford University. Dr. Darboush, are you surprised that a protest that started really with one man, a young man, setting himself on fire because he'd been told that he didn't have a license to sell vegetables and he was unemployed and he set himself on fire, and this then led to these protests, that this has now led to the fall of a president?
Surprised, yes, especially that we're talking about Tunisia and all these events that you've just described happened in Tunisia. But really, when one looks at the conditions, I think all the conditions were there for revolt to take place, for what some people have described as a revolution to take place. And indeed, that's what happened.
Was it a spontaneous revolution or was it organised in some way? Are there hands of opposition in this?
I don't think so. I think it was a very spontaneous manifestation of anger, of despair, and of discontent with a regime that has displayed nothing but contempt for its people for the best part of 50 years, because it's the same regime that has run Tunisia since independence in 1956. I haven't personally seen any hands, opposition hands, in this revolt. And so I think it was spontaneous.
We've heard this great euphoria from an awful lot of people who've called into the BBC, people we have spoken to, seen their Facebook comments and all the rest of it. But there are some words of caution, and I just want to play one now. Abdelrazek Kilani, who's head of the Tunis Bar, he spoke to French TV channel about the situation that President Ben Ali has left behind.
The country risks chaos at this time, you know. There are people who are looting the shops. There is anarchy pretty much everywhere. I have even learned that there is a prison to the north of Tunis where the prisoners set fire to the building and fled. And it appears that these are prisoners serving heavy sentences. There are even some who have been sentenced to death. So it really is a disastrous situation in which Ben Ali has left us.
Dr. Hakim Darboush, is there a danger now of a power vacuum in Tunisia?
I mean, I wouldn't look at these looting incidents and draw dramatic conclusions as to the way forward now. I think there will always be opportunistic people and looters in any similar circumstances. I think what we've seen is the reason why the regime has decided to opt for Mohamed Ghannouchi, the prime minister, as president, the interim president or the acting president for this transition period, is indeed to avoid this power vacuum, which would indeed be detrimental for the country. We've got to remember that opposition has been decapitated, weakened, and so there is no government in waiting. And so what I think seems to have been chosen by the regime is a safe way forward. So Ghannouchi will form a unity government most certainly, bringing together opposition forces in the country and possibly opposition forces that so far have been banned or exiled, and do the groundwork or prepare the groundwork for Act 2, which indeed it will be crucial. That will involve revising the laws governing elections and party political life and things like that.
Will there be a role for the military in this? And was there a role for the military in what happened today in President Ben Ali going?
Well, I think certainly the military is a force, but I think in Tunisia isn't a political force that will seek a major role in the future of Tunisia. I think if they wanted a role and to take over, they would have done it. They wouldn't have opted for this constitutional way forward. And so I think what they'll focus on and the role they'll want to play, and indeed it is an important role, is to keep order on the streets and to make sure that things are safe for this very delicate transition period to move forward safely.
And some news that's just coming in right now. The caretaker president, of course, is the former prime minister. He says he will meet representatives of political parties on Saturday to form a government. What do you make of that?
Yes, I think that's what I've just said. I think this is the most obvious way forward. I think they'll put together a caretaker government, a unity government representing all political forces, and define a way forward, a roadmap for the transition, organize elections as soon as possible. And yes, this, the Prime Minister, despite the fact that he's a veteran of the regime and the system, he's one that is widely seen to have clean hands. He's never been associated with corruption and nepotism and things like that. So he's a safe pair of hands, and I think, well, relatively speaking. And so I think that's the most likely way forward.
Okay, Dr. Hakim Darbouche, for now, thank you very much indeed. And do let us know what you think, especially if you're in Tunisia, and you can tell us about the events going on around you. NewsHour's Facebook page or World Have Your Say at bbc.com. You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Claire Balderson with NewsHour. And there's more on the drama now in Tunisia today. The president has stepped down. He's reportedly left the country. Well, France is the former colonial power in Tunisia, and many questions are being asked about whether that is where President Ben Ali will end up. Our correspondent in Paris is Christian Fraser. And Christian, no sign of him going there as yet, is there?
No, not at all. In fact, we think he has been turned around and he may indeed be heading to Dubai. There's been a flurry of rumours tonight in the French media that the deposed Tunisian president was coming here. Early indications that he might come via Malta to Paris following his daughter and granddaughter who came ahead of him earlier in the evening and landed at a military airport here in Paris. Le Monde is reporting tonight that a second plane was on its way into Paris carrying other members of the family and was told not to land. And we've had a subsequent statement from the ministry, from the foreign ministry here in Paris, that that first of all that they had no information that he was coming, and then a subsequent statement saying that they didn't wish him to be here. And indeed, in the last few minutes, we've heard from French television that President Sarkozy has made it explicitly clear that they didn't want to host the deposed Tunisian president.
Has there been any other word from France? Because, you know, as I said, the former colonial power, on everything that's been going on.
Well, I think this suggests two things. First of all, that President Ben Ali left Tunisia in such haste that no real plan was in place. I think it might also suggest that France was wary of the diplomatic fallout that might have come with the president's plane. France has been criticised in recent days for a rather muted response to the protests in Tunisia. There's been very little comment from the French government despite several weeks of violence. And indeed, just the other day, the French foreign minister said that French forces could perhaps go to Tunisia and help ease the tensions there. So she's been heavily criticised for that. And I think human rights groups here would have been appalled if they'd have played host to President Ben Ali. And that might be the reason why we've seen over the course of the evening the French perhaps changing their mind as to whether he should come here.
There is, of course, a big Tunisian immigrant community in France, isn't there? Have they had anything to say on all of this, either asking France to get involved or to stay out?
Well, there is a demonstration tonight outside the Tunisian embassy in Paris. And of course, they know that France, as the former colonial power, will play a role in the transition of power. And President Sarkozy has made it clear that he would be happy to help in that role if it's needed. There has also been some quite harsh criticism from human rights groups who have representatives in Tunisia. I spoke to one in Brussels just the other day who said he was appalled by the lack of comment there had been from all Europeans, not just over the last few weeks, but over the last few years, when it's been pretty clear to everyone that there have been some fairly serious human rights abuses in Tunisia. And his point was that there had been that silence because Tunisia had played quite a role in North Africa in the fight against extremist Islam.
Christian Fraser in France, many thanks indeed for that. Well, as I said earlier, the trigger for the unrest in Tunisia was the death of a young unemployed graduate who'd been prevented by the police from selling fruit without a licence. He set fire to himself and he died shortly afterwards from his burns. Well, then those small demonstrations started. They rapidly grew. They moved eventually to the centre of the capital. And throughout, the internet was vital. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, they all spread news amongst the protesters and amongst those watching everything unfold. Corinne Torbay from BBC Arabic TV has been following the social networks online.
Facebook is full of updates ever since we knew that the president has left the country. It's full of congratulations status. It's full of loads of welcoming reaction for the latest developments. Comments like Vive la Tunisie, long live Tunisia, long live freedom. Finally, he resigned. There are people who are attaching some national anthem clips. It shows how much this is
really triggering some very strong national feeling among the Tunisians. But also, what has been really, really interesting is that our website was all bored with a lot of comments from all around the Arab world. People were commenting on what is happening. And I can tell there have been very, very strong comments coming to us. Some of these comments, if I need to say what they are, they're from Syria, from Egypt, from Yemen, from all over the Arab world. You have something like Ali from Baghdad was saying Mabruk, Mabruk, which stands for congratulations in the Arab world for something really, really a very happy event. So Mabruk to the Tunisian people. You indeed deserve to live. Other reactions were from Syria, like Azad was saying, heroes, you are real heroes. I hope the spark passes through all authoritarian countries or authoritarian regime, especially Syria. Egypt had really some really very strong comments coming from Cairo. Some of these comments, one of them is, it is only the start of the collapse of corrupt regime all over the world and the Arab world. So you can feel like there has been all over these three last weeks a sense of jealousy for what is happening in Tunisia. Right. We have received a lot of encouraging messages to the Tunisians to continue, never to stop.
That was Corinne Torbay, and I've been talking more about the regional reaction to what's happened in Tunisia with Hisham Almirat, a Moroccan-born blogger in Rouen, France. He's co-founder of TalkMorocco.net, and Mona El Tahawi, a columnist and public speaker on Arab and Muslim issues, who's an Egyptian based in New York City. Also, Dr. Hakim Darbouche, the North Africa expert at Oxford University we heard from earlier, and the BBC's Magdi Abdelhadi. I began by asking Dr. Darbouche whether Tunisia might prove to be an example for the region, or whether the country's circumstances are so particular that others can't follow that example, even if they want to.
Well, I think by and large, this situation across the Arab world largely resembles what the situation was in Tunisia. But yes, there are nuances and differences across countries. But yes, I think to leaders, the message is clear. No one can basically reform or face the street and revolt and ousting. And for the masses and the streets, yes, this will embolden people's desire and calls for change. It will take away the perhaps existing inhibitions within people to challenge their regimes and their leaders. So the message is very clear. But whether we'll see a wave of riots and similar protests, I'm not sure.
Mona El Tahawi, do you think that this will trigger other people to take matters into their own hand, or they're just going to look enviously at Tunisia and say, well, it's not the same with us?
Well, we've seen over the past few weeks protests in solidarity with the Tunisians in Lebanon, in Jordan, and in Egypt. And I know in following the protests in Egypt, many of the young protesters there were tweeting things like revolution in Tunisia, revolution in Egypt. So they were definitely connecting them. But I think, as you said, the circumstances are quite different. Most people, I mean, over the past few weeks, I know that every Arab leader has been watching Tunisia in fear, and every Arab citizen has been watching Tunisia in hope and in solidarity. Whether they can bring over what happened to Tunisia or not, I mean, I just retweeted one young Egyptian who jokingly said, "Dear Tunisians, can you come over to Egypt for a couple of weeks? We need your help." So it's something they definitely want, but I don't know if they can do it right now.
It's still with me in the studio. Here's the BBC's Magdi Abdelhadi. Magdi, which of the leaders in the region might be most worried by what they've seen going on in Tunisia?
Very difficult question. I would say they all should be very worried, because you've got Libya next door, has been in power for more than 30 years, arguably far more repressive than the Tunisian regime. You've got Algeria next door, very similar, former French colony. They're very close to French culture, very temperamental people. We have seen an attempt at an uprising, well, some riots in the past weeks or so. Mubarak, of course, definitely another candidate. It's very difficult to single out a particular person who's more vulnerable than the others. But I just would like to add that a lot will depend A lot will depend on how the Tunisians manage a transition. Do they manage a transition to a stable, inclusive political system, or degenerate into something that is not very attractive? And that would be good news for Gaddafi, Bouteflika and Mubarak.
Indeed, and I think we can speak to Hisham Al-Mirat about all of this. Moroccan-born, a blogger, co-founder of Talk Morocco. Are they talking about it in Morocco, Hisham?
Well, I'm sure people from across the region are watching this with a lot of envy and a lot of enthusiasm. Of course, it's very early to judge whether this, let's call it revolution, it is a revolution now, will head towards a liberal democracy, a real democracy that will give the people a voice at last. And we are witnessing Tunisia, what's happening in Tunisia, and we have, you know, our own dreams. And of course, Arab regimes are different. When you talk about Morocco, we talk about Algeria, Egypt. These are different regimes with different, you know, with a power that is different from that of Ben Ali in Tunisia. But I'm sure that the people today will be dreaming about the day that they will have, when they will have their say in their country's politics. And I hope that Tunisia will bring us a democracy that is not binded by an ideology, neither Islamist nor, you know, pro-Western. You know, it will give us a model that we can follow, really.
That's interesting, Dr. Hakim Darbouche, that Hisham just mentioned there, not wanting an Islamist ideology. What, if any, is the role of Islamist ideology, Islamists generally, activists, extremists even, in what's happened in Tunisia?
In what's happened, I would say very little. I think very, you know, the role of political parties, political forces in general, has been minimal. And so, yes, in this particular instance. But more generally, I think the place of the role and the influence of Islamist movements within Tunisia is not very powerful. The Islamist party that is banned and its leaders exiled hasn't really had that much traction in Tunisia. So I would say very minimal.
Is there a danger, though, that if there's any kind of a power vacuum, they could step in, that the country could go that way, something that would worry a lot of people in the region?
Personally, I don't think so. I think Tunisians in general are not receptive to those to that kind of ideology. I think there is a proportion of Tunisians that will be receptive, and that's fine. And so I think Islamists could and perhaps should play a role in the future Tunisian government, parliament, political configuration, whatever you want to call it. But whether they will be the overwhelmingly powerful force, I really doubt it. We will not see an Algerian scenario in Tunisia, but I think, yes, there is perhaps a role for Islamists, and perhaps there should be.
Mona El-Dahawi, is there a danger that what could happen for other countries, for Egypt, for Morocco, Libya, Algeria, is that there's a reaction the other way, that rulers who are concerned about this, governments concerned about what's been going on in Tunisia, that they decide to clamp down more to stop any such protest ever starting?
That is definitely a possibility, but I think it's worth remembering that it's nothing short of poetic justice that it's been the young people of Tunisia who have fueled the majority of these protests. Not Islamists, not some kind of neocon-led will invade you in the name of democracy, but young people, you know, symbolized by that 26-year-old Mohamed Bouazizi, who set himself on fire on December the 17th. So I think, or I would hope rather, that the majority of Arab dictators who neighbor Tunisia will see that, and will see that they have themselves of the bulk of their population below, younger than the age of 30, and will understand that unemployment, poverty, and corruption, which also fueled those protests and the revolution in Tunisia, are all factors in their countries. So rather than clamping down, as Ben Ali tried to do unsuccessfully, they will learn from the Tunisian revolution that they need to start listening to those young people, giving them jobs, allowing them a say in the politics and the economy of the country, because Ben Ali tried everything, a curfew, the army, live ammunition, and still the young people came out in their thousands. So I think that is the lesson that they'll learn.
Hisham Al-Mirat, we're talking about young people. Actually, it was an awful lot of people. It started with a lot of young people in Tunisia, but we had university professors, all sorts of people, business people out on the streets there. But is this a generational thing for you, do you think? A sort of defining moment for a generation in North Africa?
I think that's probably the case. And it has worked well in Tunisia, precisely because this is the one Arab society in which the middle class is so well educated and so big and large enough to start a real movement of democratization. It might not have worked in a country like Algeria, for example, where the middle class is so thin. And the protests there haven't really succeeded, maybe because the structure of society is not ready enough to change things at the higher levels of the government. So if it can work in Tunisia, maybe we can hope for a better, or a similar scenario in other Arab countries in the future. If the middle class joins the movement and understands the demands of the young people and of the street.
That was Hisham Al-Mirat, a Moroccan-born blogger in Rouen. We were talking also to Mona Al-Tahawi, a columnist, public speaker on Arab and Muslim issues, an Egyptian based in New York, and to the BBC's Magdi Abdul Hadi and Dr. Hakim Darbouche, who's of Algerian origin, now an expert at Oxford University. On Facebook, Asha says, this is good. If a leader's lost the confidence and trust of the majority of his people in his ability to govern, then the best thing is to step down, because they own the country, especially in this case where it has resulted in the death of citizens. Nora says, it's uplifting for all the people in the world when these moments of hope arise and people take their power. However, apart from all the excitement, what will happen to Tunisia now? Who is the opposition, the political alternative? World, have your say at bbc.com for your thoughts, or do post them on our Facebook page. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. And that is our top story today. The Tunisian president, Zine El Abidine Ben Ali, has been forced from power after a month of protest over economic problems in which at least 23 people have died. Yusuf in Tunis, who's been demonstrating today, told us about the excitement he encountered on the streets.
We felt that today we could mobilize a lot of people, and that's what actually happened. It was a Woodstock type, gathering. It was practically a festival. You could see people from all social classes in Tunisia together having fun, enjoying, distributing water, even though it wasn't structured and it wasn't organized. And we were united behind, our demand.
And there's one other headline today. At least 60 pilgrims have been killed in a stampede after a religious festival in southern India. You're listening to NewsHour with Claire Balderson, and we will continue getting some reaction to the events in Tunisia today. Yusra Krigi is a research student at the University of London. She's been in London for the last 18 years. Her family left Tunisia because of the political situation there. So what are her feelings about the events of today?
Like many, all Tunisians, I'm sure, inside Tunisia and abroad, have feelings of joy and relief. At the end of a bleak chapter in Tunisia's history, long decades of dictatorship, of torture, of corruption, of incommunicado detention, of disappearances, of assassinations, of deaths under torture, and we are very relieved that this is finally over. However, we also mourn the death of over 100 peaceful protesters, and our hearts are with their families and with the people of Tunisia, who have humbled us all, really, with their sacrifices and their bravery.
You say this era is over, but you don't know that. One man has gone. Why is it going to make such a difference?
First, we must recognise that this is historic. It is a huge achievement. It is a victory for the struggle of peaceful protesters in Tunisia, joined by all forces, you know, trade unions, doctors, professors, journalists, artists, etc. We must salute their struggle and recognize the importance of this victory. However, it's true, and there is a feeling still in Tunisia and with Tunisians abroad, a feeling of apprehension and fear of what might come after this. This is not all that people had demanded. They had demanded the departure of Ben Ali, but they wanted an end to the whole system of dictatorship and corruption. And what we see now with the government that has replaced Ben Ali, it does not really bode well. It's not a promising start for the supposed new era.
But someone has to take charge in the interim, don't there? There has to be some kind of continuity, because you can't just have a power vacuum.
However, it's an insult to their sacrifices, the people who have been shot dead, those who have been injured, those who have risked their lives and gone outside, gone onto the streets to protest. It would be an insult if those who replace Ben Ali are his own men, his close men, those who have been part of the government for decades, Mohamed Al-Ghannouchi, who has replaced Ben Ali, has been part of the government for a very long time. The man who stood to his right, Abdullah Al-Khalal, has been interior minister and after that minister of state since 91 and has been involved in the torture, etc. Indeed, there is a court case brought against him in Switzerland and at the European Court of Human Rights for his involvement in torture and the deaths of 30 people under torture. So, you know, yes, there must be someone who would bring Tunisia through this transition, but it must not be those same men who were part of Ben Ali's circle.
So do you want there to be elections, presumably as soon as possible? Would that be the best option?
In fact, some Tunisian legal experts have said that while Mohamed Ghannouchi has cited Article 56 of the Constitution to assume power in the absence of the president. However, these experts say that that article is valid for the temporary absence of the president, and in that case, the same government stays in power and only the powers are delegated to the prime minister. However, they say that Article 57 is more relevant, which says that in the case of death or complete disability of the president, where they cannot assume their powers anymore, there should be a new caretaker government, temporary for between 45 and 60 days, which would assume power, and not the prime minister.
That's Tunisian research student Yusra Krigi in London. Well, David Wilson is a British expatriate in Tunisia. He's the headmaster of a British school close to Tunis. Is the situation there calm tonight?
Yes, it would seem pretty calm. We're actually a group of British expats who were sort of holed up in a hotel not far from Tunis because we understand that we were going to be evacuated tomorrow morning, but this may not happen now because the airways have been closed down. So, yes, I mean, there's generally an atmosphere around here of calm, but there's no doubt, as the previous man was saying, there is plenty of looting that's been going on, and I saw that for myself firsthand this morning. I was just going to the local village, really, stopped at gunpoint, and one of the houses of the ruling family was being looted and ransacked and then set fire to. So it was a pretty scary thing to watch, and I didn't stay too long, moved away. But it's going to be very much a question of whether these people, the politicians, as you were talking to before, are prepared to put down their personal differences and take up the challenge of a unity sort of approach to government, because that's what they need now. Right. They need a bit of consolidation.
That's David Wilson just outside Tunis. Well, in the past half hour, the Tunisian interim president, that's the former prime minister, Mohamed Ghannouchi, has said he'll meet political party leaders tomorrow. A little earlier, before that announcement, I spoke to Ahmed Bouazi, spokesperson for the opposition Progressive Democratic Party in Tunisia. What role will his party have from here on?
I think, first of all, that we have to pay attention to the demands of all these people who went in the street during 4 weeks. And we think that to maintain the institutions, the republican institutions, not to permit to a military coup. and we prefer that the institutions stay there, and a coalition government should be formed to impose new laws of the press, new laws of the elections, and in a fair election to elect the new parliament, and then they change the constitution to limit the number of presidency mandates and to organize a presidential election where all the people that are able to be president to be presented to the poll. Tomorrow we will see what are the conditions of our participation if we participate. If we think that this is to for the salvation of the country, the salvation of the institution, we will participate, but with our conditions.
And that was opposition party spokesman Ahmed Bouazi speaking to me from Tunisia a little earlier. In the past hour, President Barack Obama has condemned violence against Tunisian citizens and called on the government to hold free and fair elections soon. I condemn and deplore the use of violence against citizens peacefully voicing their opinion in Tunisia, he said, and I applaud the courage and dignity of the Tunisian people. That was in a statement issued from the White House. And news just coming in confirming what Christian Fraser was telling us a little earlier. French officials saying France does not want the Tunisian president arriving in their country. And the news that we heard earlier was that he's not going to France, possibly having had his plane turn around, believed to be heading to one of the Gulf states. Lots of your comments are coming in on this story. Tico says on the NewsHour Facebook page, if President Ben Ali of Tunisia has fled, it's good news and the right step in the proper direction. It's now up to Tunisians to unite and move on. And an email from Terry in London, who knows Tunisia very well, and says it's been very clear from day one in mid-December that the only demand of the people there was for freedom and dignity. Their method of peaceful demonstration was met by the most brutal state repression, resulting in the deaths of more than 70 men and women in Tunisia. He says, on one visit to Tunisia a number of years ago, I stayed with friends. I was shocked by the number of police on the streets, even then, and witnessed friends being arrested and taken to the police station for questioning. I welcome the change at the top and hope for a positive outcome to this change. That's it from NewsHour for now. Thanks very much for joining us for this special programme on Tunisia. From me, Claire Balderson. Goodbye.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm James Kamara-Sami with NewsHour. The speed of the Tunisian president's downfall probably surprised even those who had wished for it. A day after President Zine Al Abidine Ben Ali was forced to flee the country he'd ruled uncontested and with a very firm hand for 23 years, after a remarkable display of popular anger, the people of Tunisia are taking in the enormity of what has happened. The situation there remains fluid. The main railway station in the capital, Tunis, was burnt to the ground overnight, and reports are coming in of deaths at a prison fire in the resort town of Monastir. And with tanks and soldiers still guarding government buildings after days of violence, which has been largely directed at President Ben Ali and his family, the man who's assumed control of the country, Prime Minister Mohamed Ghannouchi, says the priority is to restore order.
I would like to say that we're going through a tough period. There are still cases of persistent theft and looting, so our first priority is to put an end to this looting and violation of private and public property. This is the very first priority.
And he said that all Tunisians should be involved in political reform.
We have had achievements, big gains, but these achievements will remain threatened as long as there is no awakening. And I mean a quick awakening, with the cooperation of all sectors of society, all Tunisian men and women, with cooperation from all political parties, whether represented in Parliament or not.
Prime Minister Mohamed Ghannouchi there with an appeal for unity. So will all this be enough for the protesters? Well, in the last hour I spoke to this resident of Tunis, Zouhair Ben Jamal. I asked him what he had seen.
Just nothing, no cars, absolutely nobody went out because there was no security at all. But I think now things are better. During the day, people, they are going to symbols, you know, like the supermarket Géant. This morning they have burnt it completely. They have been absolutely in almost all the houses of the president's family. They have burned them as well.
Why did they burn down the supermarket?
Because it belongs to one of his sons-in-law.
Right, so any symbol, any building that's associated is still being attacked.
You just name it. If you say this belonged to so-and-so for Ben Ali, that will be done in a few minutes, because the anger is very big, you know.
The Prime Minister, the interim leader, has said that there will be elections within 60 days. Who do you think will win those elections?
Nobody could tell you, absolutely nobody, because now it is a real election and it is open for everybody. That means that even the communist who was imprisoned 2 days ago, he could be one of the people, you know. So it's a real election. I believe that definitely from outside we will have an international controllers, that is for sure. The idea very clear. We will have democracy for sure. We will show the people, the Arab world, that democracy is possible.
What do you think about the Prime Minister, Mohamed Ghannouchi, who's assumed power?
Everyone will tell you that whatever happens, by principle, all these people must afterwards go away. We will keep everyone in court to see exactly what he has made and what he has to say. I call them the underproducts of Ben Ali. They will have no chance at all to be again in politics.
Do you think then that this period between now and the election will be relatively calm?
Absolutely not. It cannot be calm. But it will go better every day, you know.
Is this a changing of the generations in Tunisia?
It is 100% and 1000% a real change of generation. That's a new generation who is coming and who will be running the country and who will never and ever accept again to be under the control of Sarkozy or Obama or Bush or whatever.
And that was Tunis resident Zuhair Ben Jemal. As I was mentioning the last couple of hours, Tunisia's constitutional council has said that the Speaker of Parliament, Fouad Mebazaa, will take over as interim president and that elections for the post of president should be held within 60 days. Well, let's go to Tunis now and speak live to our correspondent there, Wira Davis. First of all, Wira, reports that there are still quite a lot of tension, lots of police and quite a lot of violence still taking place.
Indeed, it's a chaotic situation. I've just been down to the city centre. There are hundreds of soldiers, lots of secret police all over the place trying to guard the main government buildings. There are tanks on virtually every street corner. It's very difficult to see how the military at the minute is prepared to relinquish any of its control. Of course, the military had propped up the previous government. One assumes that if there is to be widespread democratic reform, that at some point the military is going to have to back down. But they seem to be dominating everything as we speak in the middle of the capital. There was looting overnight. There are reports of deaths after a rioting at a prison in the southern city of Monastir, so a far from peaceful situation.
And this political situation, to all intents and purposes, the book is being followed. We have interim leader, we have the promise of elections within 60 days. What are people there saying about that, if you've been able to speak to anyone?
Well, everybody wants change, and they want change, and they want it almost yesterday. Of course, they got the resignation, the forced resignation of a much despised president who'd been an authoritarian ruler for 23 years. The thing, as you hinted there, nobody knows exactly how the next part is going to happen. Will there be elections within 60 days? Who exactly is in charge of the country? Last night it was the former Prime Minister declaring that he was going to be the interim president. Now the Constitutional Court, the Council, has actually said no, it's going to be the Leader of Parliament who will take charge for the 60 days. So a very, very muddy picture at the minute. When that change will happen, we don't know, and it's not clear if there can be a peaceful process leading up to elections in perhaps 2 months' time.
Wira Davis in Tunis, thanks very much. Well, the events taking place in Tunisia are being watched very closely around the world, but especially in neighbouring North African and Arab countries, where they could be viewed as a potential blueprint, of course, for similar popular uprisings. Well, to get a sense of how the media and the public in those countries have been reacting, let's hear from our correspondents in Tunisia's immediate neighbours along the North African coast, Algeria and Libya. First to Rana Jawad in Tripoli.
Here in the Libyan capital, a city that is just a 3 hours' drive away from the Tunisian borders, a deafening silence over the recent unrest has reigned. It's not just the state media that has so far only offered watered-down coverage of Tunisian news, broadcasting or printing only brief factual reports of the civil uprising. Officials have so far offered no commentary on the events, and not a single Libyan analyst has come out to weigh in on the matter either. Meanwhile, the private thoughts of many ordinary Libyans who have been keenly, if not enviously, following Tunisian events have mostly remained as such. There is much that they can relate to in a country home to Africa's longest-serving head of state and where there has of late been increasing public calls for government ministers to be held accountable for what they claim to be the squandering of state funds for decades.
I'm Chloe Arnold in Algiers, where the mood on the streets this morning is one of great joy for the Tunisian people. There's been no official reaction, but the newspapers all lead with the story. El Watan has Ben Ali chased from power, while Tout sur l'Algérie strikes a more cautious note. What next for Tunisia? Algerians I've spoken to have praised their Tunisian brothers for standing up to a regime they say has repressed them for too long. There's also a feeling of unease here. Could the same thing happen in Algeria? The country was shaken by similar riots at the beginning of the year over price hikes for sugar and cooking oil, and there were violent clashes with police in several cities. But Algeria's recent troubled history, what they call here the Black Years, when Islamist militants fought government forces and hundreds of thousands lost their lives, means many Algerians have lost their appetite for any more political upheaval.
That was Chloe Arnold in Algiers. Before that, we heard from Rana Jawad in Tripoli. So what next for Tunisia? Well, joining us now to discuss that is Stephen Day. He was the British ambassador in Tunisia between 1987 and 1993 at the start of President Ben Ali's time in power. Welcome to the programme, Stephen Day. You know the country well. You know the man who has fled it well. What's your own assessment of how things will pan out in the near future?
I've got great confidence in Tunisia. It's a very resilient country. It's the most highly educated in the Arab world. It has a large diaspora of well-educated middle class. I have confidence it will settle down, but it's not going to be quick, and it's certainly not going to be easy.
Well, indeed, and we heard there from our correspondent in Tunis, Wira Davis, that even now in the last couple of hours, confusion about who is in charge of the country at the moment.
Well, the presidency will be an interim one, and the Fouad Mbazar, the head of the parliament, is very much an interim figure. Mohamed Ghannouchi, whom I know very well, is a technocrat. He was a key figure in the ousting of Bourguiba in 1987, and he's been in authority ever since. He's an extremely competent man, and I think respected by the people who know him. But he's not a big public figure. He's not an orator. And that's what they desperately need at the moment. If only an Obama could appear, a Tunisian Obama, and speak to them and guarantee that what they are going to get, democracy, freedom of speech, an openness, which they have been yearning for the last 10 years.
Yeah, you say he's respected by the people around him, but we heard there from one resident of Tunis essentially saying, well, look, he has been very much associated with this despised regime of President Ben Ali. All of them should be in the dock eventually.
Well, that's the question. Being in the dock is very clear following the rioting, and I've been in touch with a lot of Tunisians over the last month, that they targeted. There were two types. There was the looting and vandalism of the yobs, which are a minority, and there was this huge outpouring of dislike of Ben Ali when the lid blew off the pot. And that looting has been directed against the family, and particularly the family of his wife. It's been very specific, as your contact with Zahair indicated, that when they went for the supermarket, they knew exactly who owned it and why he owned it. And one of the things I would have thought the government should do is nationalise all those profits, all those properties immediately.
You've hinted there at the vacuum that exists because of the kind of regime that's been in place, that the opposition doesn't have a figurehead. I mean, how much of a problem will that be with these elections coming up potentially within the next 60 days?
It's the fundamental problem. The party, the National Party, has been in existence for 80 years. It's probably the most deeply entrenched political party in the Arab world, and it goes right down to the local street level and in every village. Ben Ali took it over. He was not a party product, but he took it over and fashioned it in his own image. And I think one has to recognize, I lived in Tunisia in the early years of Ben Ali. He was the breath of fresh air. He was immensely popular. And what they achieved, and particularly what Ghannouchi achieved in the way of economic reform, was very genuinely impressive. The regime started going bad about 8 years ago, and increasingly to a point where every Tunisian I met, and I spend a lot of time there, every single one would whisper about the problem of the family. Not the government, but the family around Ben Ali.
OK, we have to leave it there. But Stephen Day, former British ambassador in Tunisia, thanks very much. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC World Service.